Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop would like to send a big shout out to the First Lady of Hip Hop, MC Sha-Rock. Sharon Jackson, as a pioneering female, you set a standard and opened doors. We may never fully gauge the depth of your influence on hip hop as a culture. Salute with full honors, Queen Sha-Rock.
So nice, so that's what I like. Is that
I say it here, how can you just don't stop it and just get ready to jam? The Disco Daddy Wide World of Hip Hop Radio Show. Every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, only on 5live.com with special guests every week. Don't miss it.
Hello out there, Disco Daddy here. Welcome to our inaugural honor and tribute show to the queens of hip-hop culture for Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop. We're honoring all the month of September queens, ladies who have been down with us from day one, before hip-hop was called hip-hop. Okay, there's a whole history of a genre and the culture that goes back and predates the beginning of recording records, 78, 79, and on. There's at least a 7 or 8 year history of people who were out there on the grind, laying the foundation, creating concepts, things that we take for granted in hip-hop now. You ever wonder how it got to be this way? It's like the universe has evolved. People are trying to figure out how the stars and planets came to be. It didn't just pop up. Hip-hop didn't pop up. Okay, it was created, and it was embellished by people and sisters like the guest we have on today. Her name is Deborah Myers, and she's known as Baby D. She is indelibly acknowledged as the first true female hip-hop DJ in the history of the culture. And when I say the first true, because there were other, we're going to get into this in a conversation. How are you, Baby D, first of all?
I'm doing good. I am doing
okay.
Good.
Let me tell my audience, we're going to get into that, but there was a period of time when disco was phasing into hip-hop, so you did have some female DJs that existed in the disco era. One worked with Pete DJ Jones, the other was Rhonda D, and everybody generally agrees, because they began in the disco era, that although they were female DJs then, that you, Baby D, are the first two hip-hop DJ, purely hip-hop, taught by Grandmaster Flash and Theodore, Grand Wizard Theodore, the techniques of turntablism and scratching, which we're also going to get into. So, laying all that out, the first thing we do, because all this month these shows are being tribute to also the First Lady of Hip Hop, that's what I coined the phrase, MC Sharon Sha-Rock Jackson, who is, I know, is a friend of yours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she could not be with us because she has a project involved, but I interviewed her earlier in the year. And I told her that her presence would be felt for every show. So we want to give her a shout out. But today on this show, to start off our first show, okay, to start off our first show, in fact, I'm sure she's going to touch on, Baby D's going to touch on the influence that Sha-Rock had during that period of time also, because they're all from the same area, if I believe. So right now, ladies and gentlemen, Deborah Myers, Baby D, how you doing? We want you to start at the beginning of your career when as a little baby child. Tell us where you were born and grew up and how you ended up getting into this thing we call hip-hop. Baby D, y'all.
How you doing?
Good.
I was born in New York City in the Bronx, okay,
yes.
On 991 Vice Avenue, and then I moved to Freeman Street. When I first got into hip-hop is when I first seen Grandmaster Flash. I was like, oh, my God. And I was just entranced by what he was doing. So,
but wait. You gotta give us a year, and you got. All my New York guests, y'all grow up, y'all hash these stories around. You know, when you step outside of New York, no one has anything you're saying and about to say is a revelation. So you got to give us a flavor. Where did you see Grandmaster Flash? What was going on about the park dance, the parties? How did you, as a young lady in school, junior high, high school, what attracted you to start? You see what I'm saying? I want you to start there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it started when I seen Grandmaster Flash in one of the parks. I can't recall the name of the park, but it was in 60. Oh, my God. Sorry. 77. Early 77, if I'm not mistaken.
In the Bronx.
And
okay.
It was me and my girlfriend. We went to a park and we seen Grandmaster Flash. I was in junior high school. So I seen him in the park, and I was like, my gosh, I want to do that. I was, like, enthralled with that, but I didn't see any females. So mm-hmm. when I came back home, my then-boyfriend, Fucci, with Napoleon Ham, he's a DJ now. I looked at him, and I said, I seen this guy. His name was Flash. He wasn't Grandmaster Flash, he was just Flash. And I said, I want to do what he's doing. And I remember being laughed at, and that kind of threw me off. And I'm like, are you saying women can't do this? And he was like,
did your boyfriend know Flash?
No, he didn't know Flash, but he knew of Flash. So he knew who I was talking about. So he didn't believe me. So that kind of made me upset. I was in junior high school going to high school. So after that, I set out. You know, I met somebody that had turntables and everything. And I set out DJing with him. I was self-taught at first. You know, so I was doing my thing on his turntables and everything. Then I met MC Smiley. He's the MC from Harlem World, the Harlem Crew. So she asked me what I'd like to meet Theodore. So I was like, oh, my God, I've heard of Theodore. I was like.
Okay, let me wait. Mm-hmm. Now, you're meeting Flash first. Did you meet them both at the same time? Now, also, you mentioned this lady came from Harlem World. So at this point, with 77, there's flow between Harlem and the Bronx. Because most of the people I've interviewed say, you know, in the beginning they partied in there. You grew up in the area where you partied at and knew the local DJs in the area. But you're mentioning something about a lady from Harlem World. So there were people, there was Bronx and Harlem were flowing back and forth at that time?
See, at that time she wasn't in Harlem, the Harlem World crew. I just remembered her when she went to the Harlem World crew. But when I met her, MC Smiley. I met her in Harlem.
Oh, got you. Okay, I got you. All right.
A lot of people would know her more from the Harlem World crew. That's MC Smiley I'm talking about that I met.
Go ahead.
Now, I've seen Flash. I didn't know Flash then, but I've seen him playing. So she was the one to introduce me to Theodore and the L Brothers. So I went with her, and I met Theodore. So I got on his turntables, and that's when he started teaching me what he knew. So that's when I really, really got into the scratching and everything. I learned that hands-on from Theodore.
And let me ask you this. I got to ask you, since you were a student up here. As far as you know, because I've heard another name mentioned, that there was someone else who claimed that they actually began scratching. But as far as you know, Theodore was the one in your book, and you worked directly with him. There was no one else doing that, what he was doing before he was?
As far as I know, yes. As far as I know, I know that you, and don't get me wrong, the parties were going on, and I've seen some guys scratching, but they were not, they couldn't touch Theodore with a 10-foot pole.
Gotcha. That I can understand. Okay, go ahead.
Right.
Baby D.
So he taught me everything I know. I met the L Brothers, Mean Gene, and so then a guy named Trevor came in, and he said, you know, I have a female group. How would you like to DJ with them? And I was like, all female group. I was like, okay, who's this group? And he said Mercedes Ladies. First time I've ever heard of Mercedes Ladies. They were putting them together.
Wow.
So they were a crew.
Already?
Yeah, they were a crew. Like,
okay.
You know, hanging out. Because you know how we used to do have the names on the back, like a little crew.
Right.
And
right.
He wanted to make an all-female MC DJ crew. Not just a
And what year is this? What year is this? This moment happening?
I met them in 78.
78, okay.
Mm-hmm. That's when I met them. I met them in 78.
Okay.
So I was like, that's fine. So in the beginning, Smiley was there. She was thinking about joining too, but she, you know, after a while, didn't join us. So mm-hmm. I'm guessing that she went on to, I guess, the Harlem World Crew or whatever it is she did that led her to be, mm-hmm. you know, to go into the Harlem World Crew.
Okay.
So I went across the street with Trevor to meet the Mercedes Ladies. So when I walk in, you know, there was R.D. Smiley, MC Sherry Cher, MC Zena Z, and MC Everdeath. So I walk in, they looking at me, I'm looking at them. I'm like, okay, why are you still looking at me like that? Like, what's up with that? It was like, what you can do? And I'm like, okay, you know, Smiley, she was a DJ too, but she was more like a mixer, mixing in the
okay.
song. I was like,
right.
the Theodore the Flash of the group.
I got you.
So I was like, that's fine. So they looking at me like, got on a turntable and tore it up, and they were like, this is what I'm saying. And
wow.
That's where it began. That is where it began. I was like, okay, we can do this, you know. So Trevor, you know, our first gig was 63 Parks. I'm thinking, you know, me, Miss Bougie, I'm thinking we're going to have a crew of guys that's carrying our, you know, crates and equipment and stuff. I'm looking at me like, you the DJ, you don't have a DJ, you better pick up the mic. I'm like, what? I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
get to work.
I'm not kidding you. Yep, get to work. Hit the bricks. Oh, my God.
Okay.
So we took all our stuff around, you know, down the block, around the corner, up the block, 63 Park, and I'm like, you know, so, and they were like up there and down there. So I'm looking, I'm like, ain't this not nothing? So I would climb up there, plugging in. And I mean, you know, people came around because it was girls, like females.
Right.
Oh my God, what they going to do? What they going
right.
to do? So me, I'm cocky. I'm going to show you what I'm going to do.
That's right. That's right.
So when he was talking to us, you know, I was like, that's a double barrel shot. And he said, yep, and it's going to be up underneath your turntables, up underneath the table. I said, what for? He said, because if something happened and that car comes in, I'm going to take it off. First time I pick it up, I know what it was for, because they turned right back around and went the other way. You are not sampling
this
equipment.
Okay. That's right.
So, and, you know, we lit it up. From there, you know, we lit it up. Sherry got on
wow.
top, Sherry Cher without a care, and Zena Z and Everdeath, R.D. Smiley,
wow.
when it was my turn to get on, I would start rapping. So it was like I was a double deal. There I rap
wow.
and I DJ. And it was
okay.
there. Then, you know, people started saying, yo, there's a female out there like Flash, and I'm like, what? It's a female. So, and we just rocked it.
Let me ask you this. During this period, from what I understand, you became the premier. Again, this is before records. Just before records. You become the premier
yes.
Group, male or female, actually. You, the Mercedes Ladies, you appeared not just in the Bronx, but did you travel around some of the other boroughs as you became
yeah,
more
I
popular?
I played in Brooklyn. I played in Queens.
Mm-hmm.
I went down. I played in Manhattan. There was a few projects down there. Now, forgive me because I can't, you know, remember all the names.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
There was some projects that we went downtown. You know, we played there. Gosh, it's a club, and I'm not sure if it's still there. It was like a bar.
No problem. No problem. What I'm trying to get at is that it started to change. Around 78, everybody I talked to, it was a pivotal year where people were going to Queens. Queens started coming to Manhattan. Clubs started springing
yep.
up. The Fantasia in Queens
yep.
and Russell Simmons and people like that started becoming active. In fact, Curtis Blow and Russell, everything. Queens sort of became, for a minute, the hot spot because of recording studio, from what I understand. So
yep.
by 78, there was this movement of circulation going around. How were you received at all the places that you went? Was there like local opposition, or was the fact that you were the first female all group just basically sell a ticket for you right away? If everybody wanted to see Mercedes Ladies, it's all female crew.
Yeah,
how was that?
We were received well. We were received well. Loved it. The audience was good. The people were just rocking. Like, ah, oh, they females. When we come out, you know, we had to bring it because we were females, mm-hmm. and on the billet there were other guys. I remember meeting the twins. I met the twins, Disco Twins. And they were phenomenal. I was like, oh.
Explain who the Disco Twins were. Again, you're talking to people who know nothing about hip-hop.
Okay.
And the advantage we get to talking to you is you can break down who they were and their effect, you know, their influence at the time on the hip-hop scene. Go ahead.
The guys were twins, and they were from Queens, and
mm-hmm.
their system, you know, you heard of Kool Herc's system.
Right,
The twins had a hell of a system. To me, that rivaled Herc's as well, but they were from Queens, and
wow.
they were twins. And DJ Sesame, I believe it's Sesame, he's still DJing. Matter of fact, they're all still DJing, and they were the it guys in Queens. They would do parties. People, you hear them buzzing. The Disco Twins, Disco Twins. So I played with them too, you know. And I believe I've heard of Lady Love later on when I was in Queens. I think she was just coming out or something like that.
Right, she did say that. I just interviewed her. Yes.
Yeah, there was Lady Love, and then when I actually met her like a few years ago, she was telling me she used to see me. She's like, oh,
wow.
my God, I can't believe I actually met you. And I'm sitting there looking at her going, oh, my God, I can't believe I actually met you. But
now,
came about in Queens.
Okay. Now, Sharon Sharrock Jackson, what was your relationship with her, and what was at the time because she was like a lone female DJ until she was with the Disco Four or the Funky Four.
Right.
What was her influence at the time on you as a female?
Her MCing. I love her MCing. I'm Shaw Rock and I can't be stopped. MCing, the way she did it, I was like, I like that. That right there, because when she
had style.
She had a style like singing type. Rapping, but,
wow.
she, but I was like, that's boss shit right there. Ooh, excuse me, that was boss right there. And from Bronx River, I remember seeing her in Bronx River.
Would you say that she was the reason that many females were the ones who did become MCs at that period of time? She was one of the influential people who when a female might see her say, "Wow, I want to do that."
Yes, she sure enough had an impact on me. She had that MC impact on me. Yes, she did.
Wow.
You know.
Okay.
And I believe Mercedes Ladies had an impact too, but as the first single girl I've ever, it was her. Because I've never heard of Xena Z or Sherry Sharon. If they were MCing before I met them, I've never heard them. But I've heard Star Rock. Because I went to James Monroe, and we had jams in Monroe High School.
Right.
So, and Bronx River is like, skipping a jump from there. So, I've heard Shah Rock, Lisa Lee, and, you know, and at one point I joined Lisa Lee and Shah Rock. And us three had a battle against Mercedes Ladies at the Roxy, and we literally beat Mercedes Ladies when I had left Mercedes Ladies.
You had left them and joined Shah Rock and Lisa Lee for a minute, or what? How did that happen?
I did. I just went with, you know, Shah Rock was like, we need a third girl, because I guess Debbie had left them. They were no longer together. This was after the movie came out with them in it.
MC Debbie D?
They were the other girls. Yeah. They were the other girls. So Debbie D was no longer with them. They needed a third.
Okay.
So we did this show. It was a Roxy show. It was a female battle. And so it was the Us Girls. And it was the same lady. So what we did was we did the Us Girl thing. I did Debbie D's part. You know, you give me diamond rings and I have a bone chain. You know, that part. And then, you know, their brother Ron would come into No Sense. And then we just went right into that, and it was phenomenal. But what was phenomenal is that you had Mercedes Ladies, you had Shah Rock, Lisa Lee, and Baby D,
wow.
you know, other girls there. I mean, that to me was mega.
Wow.
I wish more people would talk about that.
Okay. No tapes survived from those shows, huh? That you're aware of.
Show, but Troy has a tape. I'm surprised you haven't heard it. We were in the teacher. Mm.
Okay.
So there is one. I'll send you the link if I can get it correct. I'll send you that link.
Okay. Well, that'll work. Now, records start coming out. 1978, end of 78, 79, you get the King Tim, then you get the big one from Sugar Hill Gang. How did that change the game, and how was your group affected by this time?
Well, by
recording contracts are being offered. And you guys have been on the grind for 2 or 3 years. All right. So what happens with the Mercedes ladies? How come no big record or even a test person or something from the premier female hip-hop crew at the time? How come somebody didn't come to you and say, hey, we want to put you on wax? What happened with that?
Actually, Sylvia Robinson did. But my manager at the time, which was Sherry's mother, turned her down. So I was like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like... Yeah, that
okay, because I'm going to ask you, I'm going to tell you this. We interviewed Cheryl LaPearl, three girls in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
They go to this Sugar Hill concert there in South Carolina. They have these little dreams. They write songs and stuff, and they get a guy who works backstage, or gets them backstage, and the Sugar Hill Gang, they're in the dressing room and stuff like that, and they're trying to get people to listen to the music. Nobody will listen. And there's this lady, they get ready to leave, this lady sitting over in the corner. She said, I'll listen. And they didn't recognize her, Sylvia Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't like, she didn't like the songs, but then they started rapping. And then she said, I like this. And then she called a guitar player or something like that. And then after, to make a long story short, she said, I'm going to fly you guys to New York. Okay. Three girls from South Carolina. And I wonder about the irony. You guys are on the grind for 2 years, 3 years, already name up there and everything like that. Now I understand. You see what I'm saying? How they come to New York, get signed, and become the first female group on wax and hip-hop. You see what I'm saying? So I did not know that little factoid that you just dropped. You see what I'm saying? Because I interviewed Sherry Scher. She said she's on this show with you after your interview. You guys do the first show on September 2nd. And she said that, you know, the girls start, y'all started breaking up and everything and started getting disillusioned.
Yeah, they did.
And she said
they did.
That was one of the things that caused the disillusionment, the fact that these girls just pop up, get this, you didn't know what she did. Because I asked Cheryl LaPearl, she said, we didn't know nobody when we got to New York. We had never heard of Shawak. We had never heard, you see what I'm saying? They were totally out of that element, and but they got to know y'all later. So I was just wondering, did that have an impact, the way Sherry said, on the fact that you know, well, see, now that you're telling me that the contract was turned down, that adds a little bit more complexity to the equation. Exactly what was going on? What happened?
Well, I know that they had the meeting, and then I was told that it was Sylvia Robinson, and she was turning it down. We had changed managers. Now, I'm a firm believer, had we still had the L Brothers manager, Trevor, had we still had him or anyone else that was in hip-hop more instead of the manager that we had then, we would have been on wax sequence.
Okay.
I strongly believe that. But see, what happened was Xena Z and Everdef just dropped out. So that's when Sty and Pam came in. But they're not the Mercedes ladies that were the start of hip-hop. They came in singing. You know, they didn't rap or anything like that. They came in on the singing part. So we still tried. We had a thing. We tried to get with Russell Simmons, and I remember when I was sitting there, and I believe R.D. Smiley was with me, and Russell Simmons looked at me and said, Baby D, you guys are not going to make it unless y'all get rid of that manager you have. This is
Russell
Simmons. Now, a lot of people don't know. I used to DJ with Curtis Blow.
Right.
Before it was like run. I used to DJ with Curtis Blow. So, you know, I started looking at the business and really kind of getting into it, and I was like, you know, there are some things that are just, you know, wrong.
The business end of show business.
Yes, the business end of it, because you know, I was doing a lot listening to Russell. I was there when he was pushing LL Cool J, you know.
Okay.
So I was around that a lot. And then, you know, I just kind of broke it off with Mercedes Lays. I went my own way, and I put out No Sense with Spider-Man.
How come Russell didn't extend an invitation? Had he started Def Jam Records, or was he just promoting at the time?
Yeah, he started Def Jam because he asked us about the Can-Can. He was doing it with, forgive me, I cannot remember her name, Allison Williams. She was doing the Can-Can. She was remaking the Can-Can, but he had asked us, and he was like, because the manager then wanted, you know, a certain person to sing it, and he was like, she can't sing, and we can't do this unless things change. So I was like, it was a mess.
Wow.
And yeah, it became a disillusion.
I got you. But still, your mark and the mark of the ladies with you, the Mercedes ladies, has been indelibly stamped on hip-hop. We're going to do everything we can to make sure that you always get recognized. And we want to extend a tribute to you, Baby D, for your contribution to hip-hop, okay? God has kept us all alive long enough to get these stories out there. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, what is Baby D doing now? You probably, just like myself, I'm a grandfather, you know what I'm saying? I'm into my family and stuff, but as you see, I'm doing radio programs, trying to stay active and relevant and stuff like that. What's Baby D up to right now?
Okay, I got to take it back a little bit. I dropped off the face of the earth, as Liz Flame would say, DJ Flame. And what I did when I dropped off the face of the earth, I had married a young man named Derek Peterson. He was a United States Marine. So that's how I dropped off the face of the earth. I moved from New York. This was right after I did No Sense. And I remember one of the producers going, don't marry him. You know, I wish I would have listened. He was like, not at this time, don't do it. But then I was like, I am a mother of this man's child. He asked me to marry him. And, you know, so the whole God thing, I was like, this is where my husband's going to be. This is where I need to be. So that is where the whole military life for me began.
You didn't join the military yourself.
Yes, I did. I joined the military.
Okay. That's what I heard.
Yes. Then I met my current husband now. We've been married for 23 years. And I met him.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I met him when he was a boot. So all the military people out there. And I stuck by him. You know, boots don't make that much money, but, you know, by then I got into the boot service. And I started with the cooking, and I got into the management part of that. So it just flew from there. You know, we went lots of places. The favorite places I went to was Hawaii and Japan. I was even in L.A. and did a show in L.A. when y'all used to have the band. I was in the band, and follow the band. So, yeah, I was in L.A. as well. So, all of that led up to people were looking for me. Gail found me. Sherry always knew where I was at because that's my sister. If anybody would know where I was at, it would be her. From Japan, I came to North Carolina, Camp Lejeune. Hi, all you Camp Lejeune guys out there. Camp Lejeune, heart of the Marine Corps, and now I just, you know, I worked with Sodexo for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I retired from working with them, and I'm just at home with my grandchild. Somebody has to be home, and so I'm home with my grandchild. I'm happy, and I'm getting the DJ bug. And so I'm doing to get back into it.
And you're blessed. You're blessed to still be able to. You're blessed to still be able to do that. Okay, you wake up every morning healthy and everything. That's a blessing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And it's a blessing to look to my grandchild hollering for food.
How do your grandchildren do? Are they? Do they know anything about your previous career as a DJ, a female DJ with a hip hop group?
He's 7 years old, so he hears talking about it. The funny thing was my husband, when we were in Hawaii, I was talking on the phone to someone, and then I decided to tell him, because I really never tell anybody exactly who I am or what I did, but I decided to tell him. didn't believe me. He looked at me like, yeah, okay. I was like, honey, I know LL Cool J. Yeah, okay. Everybody was like, I know him. He was like, uh-huh. Picked up the phone. Hello.
If you ran into LL today, would he recognize you?
I would have to say Baby D from the Mercedes Ladies, and then it'll click because, you know, he has so much going on.
Then he'd give you a big old hug and take you backstage.
And
yes. Yes.
We would have a big old hug. And, yeah. And I remember when he was a puny little old thing.
Okay.
Okay. I'm like, wow. But he spoke to my husband. My husband was like flabbergasted. And I was like,
wow.
But it's when we got to North Carolina is when everything came to a head. Why is this guy from Australia on the phone asking for you? Who is this guy from Germany? The guy from Germany is like, they're catching me through Facebook. Is this you, DeBar?
Right.
And I'm like, well, right. This guy had a song, another song, The Answer to No Sense, that me and Spider D had did with a good friend of mine. And he, you know, I wrote the whole thing, and the guy was on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, is this you? And I was like, that's the song I've been trying to find. So he redid it. Angelo, DJ Ozzy Boy, you know, I sent it to him. I said, what can you do with this? And he put his spin on it. It's out on, you can find it on YouTube. You just got to find DeBar and No Sense. And then,
spell your name for everybody so they know what to look for.
That's DeBora. Don't get
okay,
it.
You spell it different. Right.
Your name's DeBora. She's from England. She's a singer.
Okay.
They have some of my information attached to her. I don't know how that happened. But,
okay.
I also did a thing with, it was a compilation album. And you got to excuse me. I'm trying to remember it. And Spider D is going to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's out right now.
With Spider D?
Yes, it's the Heat Seeker.
Okay.
We're out on, we're there on, you can buy it. You can purchase it on iTunes.
Okay.
So I'm on that one with a couple of people, and it's hot. Go out there and listen to it. It's like it'll bring you back to old school meet new school.
There you go.
So,
well, Baby D, Baby D, we want to first of all thank you for your service, you and your husband, for your service to our country. Okay, and we got to definitely thank you for your contribution to hip hop culture. You're a true queen of the culture. You're going to be sent your letter of recognition, suitable for framing, okay, from
Thank
Disco
you.
Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. And anyway, in the future, we've got some other things going where we may be doing some televised stuff, and I hope to call on you in the future and continue getting your story out there. Salute with the highest respects, Baby D, Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Have a blessed day, lady, a blessed week, a blessed year, and may your blessings flow constantly.
Thank you, and as to you. It's a pleasure.
Right.
It's an honor. All right. Okay.
Thank you. You've been listening to Baby D, the first female DJ in hip-hop on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop. Peace.
Peace.
Hello. I'm Robin Lynn Maven, the CEO, creator, and producer of Vibes Live. We have over 2 million geographical listeners reaching 200 countries with nonstop music 24/7. Just tune in on VibesLive.com.
5, 5.
Hello out there, Disco Daddy here. Welcome to our September, our very special September edition of Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. All this month, we're paying tribute to and honoring queens of the culture, our worldwide culture, which is hip hop. And many of you have been following me for a while know that there is a history of hip-hop before it was called hip-hop, before any records were being made. And some of the guests on our show go back to the very early days of hip-hop, that period that I'm speaking about, first generation. And we're honored to have this show. We have, you've already heard Baby D, the first hip-hop female DJ, acknowledged throughout the culture, and Sherry Sher. Sherry Sher is with us for this half an hour, and she, along with Baby D, they were founding members of the Mercedes Ladies. We're going to get into that. A very, very powerful and prominent group before records were being made. We'll let you hear from her exactly how that came about, and she's going to tell us about herself and how she ended up getting into this culture we call hip-hop. Before we start, Sherry Sher, we both have to give a, which I promised her, she can't be with us today because she's doing a biopic on her group, the Funky Four, plus one more to the First Lady. I'm talking about MC Sharon Jackson. And I told her she would get a shout-out every show and that her presence would be felt for every show, even though she could not be here with us today. So, with that being done, because we do love her, how are you doing, Sherry Sher?
Oh, I'm good, and I want to thank you for having me on your show. I'm honored, and I appreciate the support of the first females of the culture of hip-hop to be acknowledged.
All month long we're doing this in September, and plus you ladies are going to be mailed. Where after we finish the conversation, our conversation, you stay on the line and talk to our producer. If you get your address, you're getting a big letter of recognition, gold embossed, suitable for framing. And recognizes your contribution to the culture, all of you ladies.
Wow. Okay. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. It'll also be posted on the website and on the timeline the week that your interview airs, which will be today. This is September 2nd. I'm already into the future. This is September 2nd. It's the first Saturday in September, and our guest right now, Ms. Sherry Sher, I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to let you tell us about your early beginnings, where you grew up, where you started, and take us up to the point where you started the Mercedes Ladies. But start from the very beginning of your life in New York, I assume.
Oh, definitely. I started in the Bronx, Vice Avenue, Daly Avenue. My mom lived in the Bronx and with 11 siblings, and we grew up
11?
On Daly Avenue. Yeah, I have 11 siblings. My
big
mom
family,
big family. Mom was the mom and the dad, and so I came from a single-parent home. And the vibe of the Bronx back then, you know, was at that time I was like 14 and stuff like that, 15. And the vibe of the Bronx was the boombox. Everybody was playing a boombox. Outside.
What year are you talking about? What year are you talking about, 14 or 15?
Well, I'm talking about when I got into it was like in the year of like 77, 78, around there, that year.
Okay.
And I used to go outside and used to just be out there, and I was just all out about, you know, the music that was playing, you know, and the parks and the DJs.
You went to the park jams and the other school jams that they had before all of this broke loose?
Absolutely. I used to get in trouble for it, let me explain. I used to sneak out, and I knew my mother would not come off the block to come search for me because she had too many other kids there. I used to get it when I got home, but, yeah, basically
wow.
I used to get off the block just to go to the jams. And in school, I ended up meeting R.D. Smalley. And she, me and her talked, and we became friends. And then she introduced me to going to Boston Road, where I met her friend, that Tracy, that was from Webster Project. So Boston Road, 63 Park, is where Grandmaster Flash, Theodore, you're talking about the Boston Road crew, you're talking about Breakout, everybody, the L Brothers, that was the place to be.
Wow.
63 Park
wow.
wasn't a park. It actually was the back of the schoolyard. But on the corners, you would have them jamming, Cool Herc, Zulu. You had everybody there that would just come there, and it would be one big block party But so
you were right smack dab in the middle of everybody.
Right in the middle.
Okay.
Me, RD, and her friend Tracy T, we used to just go up there because Tracy T's brother used to run the Bronx, the Boston crew, Boston Road crew,
right.
Which they used to be like the strong arm when you came on the block. You know, that's how it was back there. You had the block that had the different strong arms. So that was her brother.
Oh, no. Well, look, you know what? No, wait a minute. I'm from New York, so I do know. But my audience is worldwide, and that's one reason we have you on the show, not just to tell us about what you guys are doing, but what the flavor was. What does strong arm mean, and what was that that you had to go through to get into a block if you went from that area? That's really very important.
Well, basically, each area in the Bronx, each block was close. Everybody was close. It was always like a family. Like, even you had somebody that was drug dealers, number runners, drug users, whatever. Everybody looked out for whatever block they was on. So you couldn't come here to the block and start no nonsense, because the strong-arm crew was dudes that ran the block and held the block down. It was like a family thing. It was like, this is our block, this is our community. Ain't nobody going to come in here and start no trouble or none of that. That's how it was.
Got you. So now, were these people, aside from the people, the crews who were putting on the shows, I interviewed some of the Black Spades and the Casanovas. Are you talking about people like that who performed that as well as protecting the crews? Or were there just certain individuals from the block who just stepped up and say, today I'm going to do this or whatever?
Well, they was part of certain crews, but basically they didn't necessarily have to be a DJ or MC. But they just was like the dudes on the block that protected the block, but also was intertwined with some of the groups that's out there playing.
So everybody,
you know, MCing or DJing. Nah, they just was like strong arm. It's like, you know, they were there to make sure everything was good. Yeah.
Right, and in that period of time, you're talking about 77, 78. Very few people went outside the area. You didn't go to Harlem. Or you didn't go to Queens in the beginning, right? Most people partied right there. They had their own crews and stuff in that period in New York. Am I correct or not?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm only speaking on from my eyes and what I grew up and what I seen. So,
right.
I mean, somebody else might have been going to Queens. Somebody else might have been going to Brooklyn. But, you know, from my eyes, this is what I grew up and this is what started me into the hip-hop game.
Okay, so now go ahead. Those are your early influences. Go ahead.
Okay, so when we used to go up there, we realized that it used to be a lot of DJs that were mostly male, and the MCs was male, and then you had Sha-Rock that was known. Me and Sha-Rock used to go to the same school, so I knew Sha-Rock from school. So she was, you know, with the Uptown crew. And then most of the time you had the females out there, they was either representing a male crew, like they was like, how would you say, like they would wear the sweatshirts and be like cheer on whatever crew they was representing and wear.
But they weren't really part of it.
Absolutely. And what we noticed is that there was no all female crew out there. So that was one of the things that we started noticing. And so we, RD, Tracy T, me, and Little Bit, which was R.D. Smiley's niece, we used to go up there all the time and sneak away and go up there, and we just was loving the vibe. So we decided that we wanted to start an all-female crew, but we was wanted to be promoters. We wanted to promote parties and stuff like that. We decided to come up with a name, which we became Mercedes Young Ladies, and then we started and so we're going to incorporate some females. So it used to be like a little chest if you wanted to be down with Mercedes Young Ladies. We was actually like seeing who were you good enough to be in the crew, because in our head, we was going to be some big-time promoters. We didn't want to be considered as regular females or just out there getting with dudes. We was like wanted to be some serious. Just because at that time,
you were thinking big really from the very beginning.
Absolutely.
Right, okay.
So, We came up with the name Mercedes Young Ladies, and we started incorporating some females in the crew. But what we did, we used to go to all the block parties and all the parties, and we used to get these sweatshirts and T-shirts, and we would iron the Valco on the back. It said Mercedes Young Lady. And so the name was so popular. We had got the name so popular, every time we walked into any jam or any block party, they would be on the mic, and you would hear Mercedes Young Lady. So the name started getting catchy.
Wow.
We started getting big from just coming around, but we wasn't repping.
Right.
Like the Boston Road crew, they had our back if anything came at us, but we was females just representing as a crew. And then we, I was approached by, at the time, Theodore and them, the L Brothers manager, Trevor, and he had approached and he said, well, I heard y'all MC and stuff like that, and your name is popular out here. So I was like, yeah, we know how to MC, you know? Like, yeah, we know how to MC. So he was like,
okay,
well,
but up to that point, you hadn't done a show, but you've been rehearsing or what? I mean, you know, tell us exactly how that process happened.
The process happened
before
in that,
he put.
Well, the thing is, our name was very popular. And R.D. Smiley, she knew something about cutting. Like, she just learned how to cut on her own. And as far as rapping, Tracy, we used to go to all the rap joints, so we basically would just learn by listening and seeing what was going on. So when he approached me, I heard y'all know how to rap, and one of y'all, I said, yeah, we do. So we met, and he wanted to meet with us. We met with him, and when we met with him, he said he had a female DJ that he wanted to introduce us to because he think it would be dope if we brought our crew out because we was already bringing a name and have an all-female rap and DJ crew. So he took us to a rehearsal with the L Brothers, and at the time was MC Smiley. She was a female MC for the L Brothers. We got up there, so he introduced, it was a girl in there, and she was cutting up, and he's like, this is Baby D. And we met Baby D, and Baby D vibed with us. MC Smiley was supposed to be an MC, but she didn't really want to be in a female crew. But the birth of Mercedes Ladies was when we met with Baby D, and so now we had Baby D and R.D. Smiley, who was the two female DJs. Then we had Tracy T, Zena V, and Everdep, who I brought into the crew because I knew them from my block on Daly Avenue. And then the fourth MC was supposed to be MC Smiley, but she didn't want an MC. So I wanted to be like the manager or the one to say so over Mercedes Ladies, like, well, we're going to do whatever. But somehow I was like, well, Sherry, why don't you MC? And I'm like, I don't want to be an MC. But I end up being the fourth MC. So we would be up there, and trust me, when I say I used to get the riff from my mom, some of their moms used to come up there looking for us because at the time your mom's like, rap MC, what is that? But I knew my mom, I was going to get it when I got home. I know she wouldn't come out looking for me. She had too many other kids at home. So I was like, I ain't worried about being embarrassed. But to be rehearsing at the L Brothers rehearsing place with Trevor and Action, we'd be up there rehearsing with Baby D day in and day out. And then our first appearance, they said, well, y'all going to do 63 Park. So he said, we're going to put out these flyers. And 63 Park, I can tell you, everybody was jamming in 63 Park that had a name to themselves. And it was a schoolyard. And if you got it then, you ain't represent, you was done. It was almost like the Apollo, if you ain't come amateur night at the Apollo. So
I got you. What year was this now? When did this jump off? The very first one.
And then, when it started, it was like the, I'd say about 79, 80.
The Mercedes Ladies break out in the Bronx.
Right. So we got up there, and we had to carry our own equipment. But it was a crowd out there waiting, like, who are these first females in hip-hop? Who are these girls who get on the stage?
Wow.
So we got...
Were you nervous? Were you girls nervous?
You know what? We weren't nervous because I can tell you all of us were some very high-strung females. Like, we all had that. We were all alphas. So we wasn't really nervous.
Okay, I got you. You were ready.
We were ready. We were some young females ready, we ready to take the dude on, like, bump that. So we got
there
and it was a big crowd up there, and it was like, it was, we had our routine ready, and it was like one for the money, two for the show, Baby D, Let It Go, and she zig, and when she did that zig, and we just followed the routine, the crowd just went bananas, and that
was amazing. Wow, I wish, any tapes ever made of that? I mean, you know, we all missed the video phase, but anybody ever see anybody that said, I was here, I taped you guys?
You know what was so interesting was it was people that taped it, and as my journey, as and I shared it as an inspiration, at the time when, you know, all of us came from single-parent homes, all the Mercedes ladies, we was from single-parent homes, and, you know, it was like struggling at home, and like I said, my mom had 11 kids, and she was doing the best she can. But during my time of being in Mercedes Ladies and trying to and putting the name out there for ourselves, we had tapes, pictures, and everything. But we used to go through evictions, my mom, a lot. A lot of our stuff lost so much. You know? But I was able to, I have like some original flyers that people have blessed me with. Some pictures we have, but the pictures that we do have is pictures when we've gotten to the singing part and, my mother started managing us, and we got met with Russell Sutton, and then Guy Fisher, he took us on as a manager. But this is later on when we became into the singing part, and that's when some of the girls had dropped out. But during the interim, another DJ, which was Lil Spank, that Baby D had brought to meet us. So we ended up with three female DJs and four female MCs.
How did you do your shows? If you got two or three DJs, were they all on stage at the same time, or did you guys alternate shows? What kind of process?
All four of us, MCs was on the stage all time, and the DJs would rotate. Like Baby D was more like the baddest cutter, like she was like flashing them like cut. RG was more like a zig and know how to mix a song zig. Lil Spank, when she came, when she brought to the tables, was more like rap, but a little bit more also music. Like, you know, at the era, some of disco, well, she just knew how to blend records like that. So we had a combination of all, from rugged to... And we would have a routine. It would always be a routine. So, we started doing all of the blocks on the corners, the blocks, the park. Then we started doing the PAL. Then we was doing everything that the men were doing. And then, you know, through the whole game, it was a struggle because we were struggling and we were doing it, but we wasn't getting paid. We start, you know, like some of the guys, we'd be featured on the thing with Grandmaster Flash and all of that and doing roller skating.
Right.
But when it was time for us to get our pay, we ended up having to fight. And then we eventually change managers, but we never would get our pay. And when I say we used to walk to parties, we used to walk to our gigs. We used to be in rehearsal all night, and we didn't get paid, but we definitely end up getting the rep. And from that, I mean, I wrote a book. I wrote the first female hip hop novel ever published, Mercedes Ladies, and my book is The Journey of Mercedes Ladies, and it's on the same people that did Biggie Smalls' book. They did my book, Kennison and Vibe, and my book got published right after Biggie's small book got published. So it was advertised in the Vibe. Vibe magazine advertised it all the time. I did three college tours where Carnell is teaching my book in hip Africana studies, and I also got my book inducted into the archives of rare books in Carnell University. I did radio shows. I did Star Channel. BET, my mic sounds nice is when Chuck D is talking about Mercedes Ladies from my book, Terrence One. So I did what happened was the girls, after a while, we've been through so much when you read the book. So a lot of them was like, you know what, I can't do this no more. And they started, like Baby G moved to Hawaii and joined the Army. My sisters, they went down. Everybody went their way, so I would call everybody.
Well, let me ask you, okay, let me slow you down. When this started happening, and they started, y'all started breaking up, was this just before records started coming out, or was this after records? Because I know from talking to DJ Lady Love and a few others, that when records started coming out, that really changed the whole game. So at what point did you guys, the Mercedes ladies, start breaking up? Was it because all of this that you're talking about, the shows that you rock and everything, this was just before records started being made, right? Am I correct?
It was just before records started being made.
Okay.
Right.
So what happened?
Well, it took a toll on us. I mean, we was doing all kind of shows. We was out there hustling and grinding just like the dudes were. And then records started coming out, which was like the Sugar Hill came out, and then they had that sequence.
You would think that you being a prominent female group period, that someone would have approached you during that period and
right.
said, hey, Mercedes ladies, it's just a natural, why don't y'all, you know, boom. What happened? Ever happen?
Well, I'm honestly tell you, and I didn't, when I made my book, I didn't want to say how we did wrong. I just said the grind and the journey we went on. And what happened was a lot of times when the records started being made, they were focusing on the men, Grandmaster Flash, Bambada. And during all
right.
that time, what we just felt at that time was, wow, why are they not mentioning Mercedes ladies? And everybody's like, why are they not putting y'all on? So I don't know if it was
right.
a male thing. I don't know what it was, but it didn't happen. And then when we did get approached with a record deal, it was with Russell Simmons. And Sal from Disco Fever. Well, Russell Simmons had us in the studio, and we was going to release the it was the Pointer Sisters, the Can Can, but we was going to do it. We turned it into rap and singing. So he had us
right.
out in the studio at night. He had us rehearsing with this guy, Larry. I'm saying the name right. Larry Smith had us at his house rehearsing. We got in the studio. The record was supposed to come out. We was all excited, and this really was a touching part when the group just really was breaking, because the record was supposed to come out, and then the night that he told us it was going to air on radio is when we got the phone call, and he said he decided to give it to Allison Williams, and that kind of broke us. It just broke our heart because we put, you know, pain in it, and at that time, my mom and us was just getting evicted, so it was like it was like a turning point in the
group. A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, and the girls just got, some of the girls like, yo, I can't do this no more. It's drained. We did what we did. And a lot of them, you know, got discouraged because it was like, okay, it's discouraging. Like, so a lot of the girls dropped out. Zena Z had dropped out. Ever Def had dropped out. The Spank had been dropped out. And then I put my two youngest sisters in it, which was Pam and Sty. I had bought them to replace them, and then my mother started telling us we should sing, and then that's when we had started singing, and then we had.
What year is this that you're going through this transformation now? 1980 or 81?
I can't give you like exact years, but it was like in 81, 82.
Okay.
And we started singing, and then we got picked up for the Dave Winfield Foundation, so we started doing shows for Dave Winfield, the baseball player. And so we got picked up by
him.
Yeah, we were doing the Dave Winfield Foundation. And then from that, Donald D. had called us to do a record with him, and that's the record, Come On to Donald Crew. Donald D., he called us.
That's the Mercedes
that
ladies, with Donald
that's
D.
the Mercedes, yes.
Wow.
And
okay.
we got with him, and we were doing shows with him, and we didn't get out. Rightful credit we were supposed to get, we didn't get paid. People sometimes now look at that and say, wow, I just a lot of baby ladies, y'all did that song. So we had took a toll. So what I did was turn our journey, and I turned it into a book. And then Vibes Hip Hop Divas, I did Ladies First, that's the one with Missy Elliott and Mary Jane, everybody who was in that book, that Vibe magazine had put out called Hip Hop Divas. And they called they put an article and it said Ladies First, and that's when they talked about Mercedes Ladies. And then from then on, it was like people hitting up, like wanting us to do an interview and Vibe. That's how we got into all these magazines. But that also led me getting my book published.
Okay. And I'm going to just tell you, did you ever meet, I'm sure you probably eventually, did you ever meet Sequence? Cheryl LaPearl and Andy Stone and those ladies.
Actually, when Sha Rock gave a woman's event about, was it last summer or the summer before?
Last summer, right in June.
Yeah,
right.
I was on the board. I was part of that, and Sequence was there, and we sat down and talked because it was always a thing. Everybody's like, well, how could Sequence was the first one? Mercedes Ladies was out, but really Sequence was the first to come out with a
Well, see, this is what I find interesting, which is why I really wanted to interview you, because when I interviewed Cheryl, I was telling her, I was saying, okay, you ladies from North Carolina, I believe,
mm-hmm.
or South Carolina, and they happened to be trying to get backstage to a show that was then taking place there, given by Sugar Hill Records, and they was trying to, nobody would listen to their music, and there was this lady sitting over in the corner with no makeup on and stuff like that, just sitting over there, and she said, I'll listen. And so, because I found it so, that you top group in New York, you would think, you see what I'm saying? They got in a roundabout way. You know, she flew them from Carolina to New York, and they ended up becoming the first female group on record, even though there was an all-female group
And we were very hurt
already
by it.
In New York.
Very hurt.
Right.
We didn't know them, but we were very hurt by it. Very hurt.
I can imagine. That's what I wanted to ask you. What did that feel like to see them? And that they weren't even from New York. It probably would have been easier if it was some New York females that got them first recorded contract. But I know that must have. You didn't meet them back in those days, though, when that happened, did you?
No, we did not. And we were females that started in the birth of hip-hop, like the Bronx. We were Bronx females. And it was just crazy. And I think, well, at the time, I'm talking about when we was angry and really pissed off, we was also pissed off at Grandmaster Flash and all of them, because, like, y'all in there with Sugar Hill, y'all should have said, well, you know, we got them Sadie's ladies that we, our name was known. We was hood famous.
Right.
Like, are you serious? But it happened, and, you know, as I look at it now, whatever's meant to happen is the way it's supposed to happen, and it happened, and it was supposed to happen. But we got to really, I got to sit to talk and meet Sequence when Sha Rock and us did the thing last summer, in the beginning of the summer, the women's hip-hop thing, and, you know, it was just cool, and we spoke and everything, and it was all cool. But, you know, back then, we were crying. We were ready to beat up everybody, blow up boroughs, everything. But, you know, it's just what I learned now through the spirit is just, like, whatever is meant to be is going to be. Nothing happens by chance.
And we've got a unique story that no one has ever heard between you and LaPearl, both of you guys on the show, about a very important moment in hip-hop history that you just talked about, how a first female badass crew did not get signed or just missed out because of certain circumstances, and it's some ladies from South Carolina come get discovered in South Carolina and flown to New York and end up making a first female rap record.
Absolutely.
So, still, you and your ladies broke down doors. You proved something in an era of male-dominated groups that not only could females bang, but you could get the respect of the crowds, the people who came out to see you. They knew who the Mercedes ladies were. New York knew who you were. You know what I'm saying? You ruled for a period of time, and we've got like 3 minutes. So I want you to tell us what Cher is doing. You can talk a little bit about your book, because it is a novel, I understand, but it is based on the Mercedes Ladies. So why don't you tell us about the Mercedes Ladies novel? What is it, actually?
Well, the novel...
And where can people get it?
Well, it's on Amazon.com. You could go on SherryShare.com to see my bio. And the book, I didn't want a book about how we was done wrong. I wanted the book to be about some phenomenal young black females that grew up with nothing, and we didn't end up becoming the first all-female DJ rap group in hip-hop history. So my book is based on the journey and the heartaches and the pain of real women issues of drugs, alcohol, everything that we experienced of going through heartache, not just from coming from single parent homes, but we did our thing, and something that we should look back and be proud of, and that is being talked about in colleges and in this generation now. Like, it's amazing how people are hitting me up, and they're like, "When a movie coming out?" Because I read the book, and I'm like, well, I don't have a movie. Like, that would be so dope. It's like, and I was like, "Don't worry, everything's gonna happen the way it's supposed to happen, and it's gonna happen. It's definitely gonna happen." And so we've been in a lot of magazines, everything, and it's just, it, to me, it's like, wow, we're getting the recognition now. But see, we look back, when I look back at the pain and the suffering and the heartache that we went through as young women coming up, and I look now, I said, well, it wasn't done in vain. It was done.
Well,
yeah, that's how I look at it.
You know what?
I'm still in the studio. People hit me for flows. I done did like about 3 tracks. Everybody hits me up and say, "Can you come spit something on the track? You still got it?" And I just go do it. I love doing it. It's just for fun now. But
wow.
And my brand, I'm doing my brand that's based mm-hmm. on a look from the female pioneers. So okay. It's just a whole world brand.
And you're on Facebook, Sherry Share.
Sherry Share. Instagram is Sherry Share BX.
Okay.
Yes.
This is Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop, and we're talking to a lady who is definitely a queen of our worldwide culture, Sherry Share, one of the founding members of the Mercedes Ladies. And she's kicking off this first weekend of September. We want to thank you, Sherry Share, for your contribution to hip hop.
And I want to thank you and big up to all of my sisters, Sha Rock, MC Smack, all of the and all of the Mercedes Ladies, all of us girls that went through the grind of the era, the beginning of the era.
And we're going to have a couple of more of them on the show throughout the month, also telling their sides of what it was like to be part of a phenomenal group like yours. In the meantime, Queen, we want any way we can help you in the future, to help you get the word out, or any project you may be working on, feel free to contact us.
Thank
okay?
you. Thank
and we
you.
Love you. All right.
And
this has been
you.
Sherry Share. Thank you.
Yes.
On Disco Daddy. And our producer, I know she's listening in, Robin Lynn. Don't forget, stay on the phone so she can get your address to mail you your letter of recognition.
And I definitely
Sherry Share on Disco Daddy.
And Robin Lynn. Thank you.
On Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Don't go away. We've got more coming your way all through September. We honor queens of our culture, and they definitely do deserve it. Peace.
So, wasn't it a great show? Come back next week, every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop Show. Man, it's a great one. Epic. See you next week. Bye.